where we are. Where are we? Who has the right paragraph where we are?
It's page number 968.
Paragraph beginning.
The creation of a supramental being.
Okay, good. I have the same. So, but it's good. So, he hasn't gone very far. We've just gone about 2 pages or 3 pages into the chapter. And Sri Aurobindo over here.
Did we not read that paragraph? It was read and then... there is something in the nature. I mean, that's my marking says that. The next paragraph.
Yeah, maybe we finished reading this one.
I think Keka is right. I think I actually read that one last time. Okay. I think we are on there's something in the nature of supermind itself. On page 105 in my book.
There was the next paragraph.
Okay. So, yeah, I see over here that I remember that shining ladder of ascending degrees and successive constituent formations. Okay, I agree. Yes, we finished that paragraph. So, here Sri Aurobindo is moving from the previous paragraph which talked about the ascent towards supermind. And the individual transition from an overmental transformation of the being to an entry in a supermind and bringing it into the self. From there, he is now considering this action actually forming what is called the Gnostic being. So the formation of the Gnostic being is at once an individual formation and a cosmic formation. And this chapter bears that kind of impression of something that is occurring in the terrestrial nature. So though it may be that this is a certain kind of achievement by the sadhana of an individual, what it unleashes is a certain working that prepares the ground for the emergence of the Gnostic being as a species change, the emergence of a new species. So he's talking in this particular chapter in terms of the transformation of nature. Where we are right now, he first lays out the difficulty of talking about this, because in a sense, the very principle of the ignorance, which is a finite principle, a finitizing principle, if you want to call it that, is overpassed into a consciousness whose native modality is the infinite. It is bringing the infinite into the finite. And so that kind of modality is something foreign to our consciousness. This is the reason why he says that it is difficult to talk about it, but then he says that that very difference is something that should give us a foothold to say something about it and to form at least the beginnings of an idea that will aid us in our openness and progressive evolution into this consciousness. So after that, he talks about how in nature this double process of ascent and descent has prepared various rungs by which consciousness has evolved. And similar process could be thought of at this point, with the exception that over here there will be a greater reliance on the descent of this consciousness and eruption into the normal consciousness of the earth or of the material universe, the evolutionary material universe. And this descent would actually mean the unveiled working of the power which is already at work here. And in that paragraph, two paragraphs before, Sri Aurobindo points out how, indeed, it is by veiling itself that the supermind creates the ignorance in the first place and operates perfectly cognizant of what is going on over here, but creating a subsidiary reality which is not so cognizant. Now, this subsidiary reality or veiled reality is what will now receive the possibility of its own awareness of the original working of supermind in this evolutionary reality. An evolving reality need not be a reality that is constrained by a limit of finiteness. And that is exactly what the ignorance is all about. So an evolving ignorance may yield to an evolving knowledge. So this is the transition that he talks about in that previous paragraph, two paragraphs back. And then he says there are two caveats that he's providing. One is that even in that process, we cannot expect things to happen overnight. There is a long preparation before any kind of real effect can be experienced in the unveiling of the supramental working. And secondly, the paragraph before the last one, he's talking about the fact that in the past, it is by preparing its own ground in the subliminal, the inner and outer consciousness has been the walled reality through which higher degrees of consciousness manifest themselves. But in this particular case, that particular difference or division between the inner and the outer has to be overcome. In the individual who has arisen to supermind, this must be overcome at a much earlier stage. It is in fact part of the psychic transformation. But in the cosmos and the working of the Gnostic consciousness in the cosmos must prepare its ground by thinning this division between the inner and the outer, and ultimately abolishing it, making it possible for a cosmic growth of the psychic consciousness as a precursor to the action of the supermind in humans, in human beings. If this happens to some extent, then the supramental manifestation will begin to become expressed in terms of the various degrees of consciousness that are available in between the ignorance and the supermind. That is what he talks about in that last paragraph that we considered, where supermind taking up the various ranges of consciousness will perfect them, will bring them under the power of unity and harmony, and open up gradually the gates of higher mind, intuitive mind, and overmind as possibilities of the journey of human consciousness in its stable expression, a stable experience. So that is where we were at present in our study, I believe. I would like to add that perhaps, again, looking at these paragraphs we have just covered, perhaps in the cosmic sense, what we are going through at present is really that preparatory phase. And the preparation is something which we are experiencing only dimly, because to a certain very great degree, this wall between the inner and the outer consciousness is too dense. That's exactly why until the point that to some large degree in the world, unless this is reduced, there is difficulty in the unveiled working of supermind that Sri Aurobindo is talking about in any appreciable degree. Of course, there are a variety of possibilities of accelerated communities, various groupings that, you know, move ahead in establishing the conditions under which supermind's work can be done. But even here, there must emerge first a subjective life, an inner life, which is sufficiently expressed. Secondly, a purification of that inner life and a subjection of the inner life to the ordering principle of the psychic being. And thirdly, an opening up of the ranges of cosmic consciousness, which will allow a certain life, a common life to emerge that can express in an unveiled form the action of the Supermoon. Now, in modern times, one may say that from the turn of the 19th and 20th century, there was a very strong pressure felt moving up to the middle of the 20th century, almost one may say, coinciding with the entire trajectory of the lives of Sri Aurobindo and maybe life of the mother, a very strong power to bring the subjective life of humanity to the front. This is what yielded tremendous revolutions in the intellectual life of humanity right from the turn of the 19th and 20th century, whether in science, in art, in literature, in a variety of ways, the subjective life seemed to be pushing towards some radical expression it had never achieved before in human history. Now, I believe this is part of the action leading to the breaking down of the wall between the inner and outer consciousness. But at the same time, there has been, since then, a much greater obstruction to this process, a much greater materialization, if one might use that term, much greater materialism, and in a cosmic sense. On the other hand, the other thing that has happened over the last century is the emergence of a global consciousness. We were discussing this last time in firstly the sense of a universal humanity, the fact that there are human, the sense of being human is something quite ubiquitously spread out over the earth now. We are a human race faced with a human destiny. This sense has only grown, even if mediated by immaterialism. So that is certainly one of the factors leading to a kind of emergence of the universal. The other being put into the background for now, perhaps is making a return in our present, even our contemporary times, a return of the subjective life. Now, what that pressure for the subjective in the early 20th century, right up to the mid-20th century, what it lacked was the ordering principle of the psychic. The psychic life was not sufficiently brought to the front. This whole notion of the emergence of the subjective consciousness was something that remained chaotic. Particularly in the arts, we find tremendous sporadic expressions of a high subjective quality, inner quality, but at the same time, a tremendous amount of chaotic activity, bohemian activity, something that is characterized by what one great poet, Rabeau, called the wild derangement of the senses. It is almost as if we must violently or we must violate the normality of our experiences to arrive at the subjective life. Now, this is not conducive to the emergence of a new center of order, which is that of the psychic being. So perhaps this intervention of a more materialistic interlude has led to the settling of new conditions under which a new attempt can be made at a greater purity of the subjective emergence.
Interestingly, last probably 10 years or so, the technology has advanced so much that now, it's almost like, a dance kind of situation that nothing is being able to concretize. Nothing in the sense, no theory, at least in science and, metaphysics or whatever, is being able to concretize itself for very long. I mean, something else is coming and sort of taking it over. And so, for example, there has been Stephen Hawking, cracked his own theory in 2004, and the people started doing. U.S. government is putting in a lot of money for studying the sun. There has been, LHC, which everybody is familiar with, which is trying to look at the Big Bang, consequence. So, basically, lots of things are going on, and actually in the solar observation, there's so much data that, people are facing the magnitude of the thing that they're trying to, observe. So it's quite an interesting, I just wanted to sort of contribute a little bit of information.
No, I completely agree. Maybe exactly what is happening is the reverse side of this breaking the bridge, breaking the wall between the inner and outer life. It is as if now the outer side of things is reaching out towards the inner. There are new books being written, exactly as you say, about the tremendous amount of new technologies and new data and new theories that are exploding into the human consciousness. So that almost, it's very difficult to keep pace with the assimilation of these discoveries. But yet, that assimilation is also going on at some level because, there are some works that are coming out that are talking about our times, these times, being similar to the time of the 16th century Renaissance, when new technologies caused a totally new idea of the world to emerge. So to now, our new technologies, our new visioning technologies are creating new idea of the human being, of the world, of everything. New philosophies and new orientations are emerging. Perhaps it's a very powerful period of assimilation that is a part of the process leading to this thinning of the of the crust between the inner and the outer life.
Yeah, more mundane note, the stock market today lost 350 points because of worries about the Greek economy. I thought that's a really good example of, universalization of culture.
Why?
Without the psychic influence.
True. Very true.
Vishishta, you compared current times with the times of Renaissance, and somehow I feel that the purity of or the quest for knowledge is a lot more muddled with the commercial aspects these days than much before. So even if you were to go back to beginning of 20th century and the scientific advances and all that, if you look at it, there is a kind of a rigor towards fundamental sciences and those type of things. And granted, a lot of innovations, a lot of things are happening, but the depth or the purity towards the quest for the knowledge itself is, I think that is very much lacking in the current times. That's what I think. It is very much shallow. The thing is driven much by the quick success in terms of whatever it takes than the real quest for knowing something.
So, well, actually, if you think of it, I mean, we glorify the Renaissance, but the Renaissance was also riddled with commercial interests. It's the Renaissance which heals the whole age of colonialism. There is a big difference in that age of colonialism did not have any criticism from within to its own motives. In today's world, the global situation is so tight and we are so much in a crisis, global crisis, that the awareness of these commercial motives is much greater. I think they exist, but at the same time, the need to overcome them, the criticism of these and the sort of awareness of our crisis situation as a race is much greater today than it was during the time of the Renaissance. And I don't think at the time of the Renaissance, we were any less greedy than they are today, or at least the people who were involved in opening up new knowledge were also quickly swallowed up by the motives of power. Now, if you're talking about the turn of the 19th and 20th century, I will agree that in the academy at that time, there was a much greater inner rigor and purity, both in the sciences and in some of the humanities. But my feeling is that was only because the whole movement was much more in the mental world. As soon as the benefits of these particular revolutions of knowledge entered into the vital, into the life world, they led to what we are seeing today. But that exactly is the condition under which there is such a tremendous need felt to arrive at a global destiny of unity and harmony. That has not yet emerged so well in today's world, perhaps, but it is emerging because mankind is recognizing the fact that it's either that or destruction, global destruction. The crisis situation is only increasing in our awareness.
I mean, maybe I'm biased in my optimism. It looks like that people were content with this kind of, technical gadgets and all kinds of things. But slowly, I think people are moving out of it. Like it has taken its own course, and now even the greatest scientists, people are not so much, worshipping them like as if they know everything. Because they themselves are overwhelmed with their own observations. It's like they're targeting something which is way beyond their scope, and it is becoming evident with the technical, improvement of, with the improvement of technology. So it's showing the limitation more and more. It's my observation, which is it's not that human beings, it's their effort. It's the nature which is showing that, this is where you have to stop. Or this is where you are limited. that sort of thing.
Yeah, undoubtedly that is part of the experience of, you know, the crisis of contemporary global world. And certainly that is opening up in certain sections at least, more invisibly than visibly perhaps, an aspiration and seeking towards solutions of consciousness. We don't see this on the surface that much, but there are people who are talking about it. For example, the whole movement called that of the cultural creatives, you know, sort of an indicator in that direction. Of course, it's still, there's a lot of work to be done, even at the institutional level. There is tremendous difficulties in our present due to the setup of commercial forces, etc. But also at the same time, the power of awareness has grown a lot more. Human conscience has, you know, developed to a much greater extent than it was during the time of the Renaissance, for example. Yeah. Even 100 years back.
That is sheesh.
Yeah.
Last night, I watched the Nova. It was about the business of education.
Right.
For-profit education is growing. And I don't know, it was kind of sad in one sense in that it just seemed like college is getting to be more and more of a business, and people go there to learn trades, basically, to earn money. And it's just sad. I mean, even when I went to college, you could still go and get an education, I mean, at the mental level, but it really did teach you how to think and perhaps bring out your inner self more and your creativity. And now it's just it just seems sad that there's so much emphasis on making money, and the institutions are becoming really connected to businesses, or they are businesses. It's getting bigger all the time. However, at the same time, it's kind of obvious that it's a very superficial thing. I don't know. It kind of makes clearer the need for a different kind of education.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Also note that the very fact that of what you're talking about shows the centrality of education in the modern world. It is no longer a luxury or pastime of the rich or of the elite. It is now critical to the entire population of humanity, because our age is gradually showing itself to be an age of knowledge. It's the knowledge economy, as it's called. And this idea of a knowledge economy places the academy at its center, makes that into the most valuable economic resource, in a sense. That's what puts so much darkness into it as a commercial factor. But it also universalizes knowledge. It's a trend in a certain direction that certainly needs cleaning up, but also it's an inevitable outcome of a good direction, I feel.
Yeah, I think the direction is good, but it's kind of sad to see education being replaced by training or technical knowledge. Yeah.
That's true, too.
Debashish, last week you talked about the hour of God, and
yeah.
I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit, and I was wondering, aside from the axial age, what other instances of the hour of God in our history, if there's that I'd be familiar with.
Yeah, well, the idea of the hour of God is actually not merely ages of wisdom, but ages when consciousness has actually moved in some, you know, widespread way and created certain types of establishments if not knowledge, higher ideas than before. It has happened all of, we were talking about the Renaissance, for example, but the Renaissance is one of those periods. Now, we think of the Renaissance, for example, as a, European phenomenon. But again, just like the Axial Age, if you actually look at what was happening, say, in India at the time, in China at the time, I don't know what was happening in Africa at the time, or in the Americas at that time, but certainly in the Eurasian continent, tremendous, creative forces were at work. And these forces were, opening up new doors, universalizing knowledge, bringing various kinds of perceptions into the world, which did not exist before. So the hour of God is a quickening of universal consciousness. It opens up a door to large numbers of people in a short period of time. It's an intensification of evolution. So exactly what he's talking about over here, where you have some forces from above or from within that have been preparing for a long time that suddenly emerge in a widespread manner, that kind of thing is what Sri Aurobindo is calling an hour of God. The hour of God can be localized. In other words, the two periods we just talked about, the Renaissance for one, and then if we talk about the turn of the 20th century, moving from 1850 to 1950, that particular 100 years was a spectacular period in the subjective life of human beings. So too, if you look at regional histories, say if you look at colonized nations, that 50 years of the 20th century, for example, has been a great period of decolonization. And if you look at the histories of colonized nations during this period, you'll find a tremendous galaxy of luminaries have emerged, and they have, created conditions that we are still assimilating. I believe, for example, the founders of the, of the Indian nation have left, legacies of idea that we still haven't fully been able to assimilate. So these are kind of periods of this intense evolutionary activity that, come and go. And once they're gone, there seems to be a drop to some more kind of mediocre level. But when they're there, humanity seems to rise to some kind of semi-superhuman status.
I can't help but think that the advent of the internet has been ushering in almost maybe a mini hour of God, in that the world, we're seeing the world in a more united and collective way because of it. We are now able to share information and collaborate with one another from all ends of the world like we've never been able to do before.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable the kind of, swiftness with which these expectations of global culture have established themselves on the earth and universalized themselves is certainly miraculous, to say the least.
Yeah, I also very much, feel that way. It has really taken over space and time both at the same time. It can go anywhere. It's just unbelievable. It sounds simple, but the effect is really tremendous.
Yeah, and since we are in it, we don't experience it as tremendous a thing as it is. It's particularly in retrospect that these periods show their dimension to be as tremendous as they really are. And also, we're participants in this particular revolutionary time. So that part of our response to these things is also critical. And that is good. I mean, we need to shape it. Nothing that happens is without any problem. There are all kinds of forces that are pushing to be expressed. and we are in, you know, in the making of a future. And so, you know, we tend to be critical about many things within it. But at the same time, there is no doubting the fact that it is absolutely remarkable, the time through which we are passing and present.
Well, even the decentralization now of media and information is profound, in that anyone can contribute who has a cell phone and an internet connection to document whatever is happening in their neighborhood. So there's no longer a centralized control of the message, for example, that institutions might want to present. So it's more of a democratization of information and media as well.
Yeah, this is true. But of course, there are also people who have pointed out that this has made for other kinds of commercial control to establish themselves, targeted you know, advertising of various kinds that give us various decentralized, you know, targeted forms of consumption. And these forms of consumption, to some extent, occupy us to a much greater extent, so that there isn't the internality to produce something of value. That has also happened. I mean, you know, there are both sides to it. But certainly the medium in itself is profoundly revolutionary. What is happening to the global media today are profoundly revolutionary.
And actually, I also feel very much that, I mean, it's also very important to have this decentralization, because it's sort of breaking the illusory hierarchy of knowledge and status both at the same time.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Sure.
There is something in the nature of supermind itself that would make this great result inevitable. It is in its foundation a unitary and integralizing and harmonic consciousness, and in its descent and evolutionary working out of the diversity of the infinite, it would not lose its unitarian trend. Its push towards integralization or its harmonic influence. The overmind follows out diversities and divergent possibilities on their own lines of divergence. It can allow contradictions and discords, but it makes them elements of a cosmic whole, so that they are forced, however unwittingly and in spite of themselves, to contribute their shares to its wholeness. Or we may say that it accepts and even encourages contradictions, but obliges them to support each other's existence, so that there may be divergent roads of being and consciousness and experience that lead away from the one and from each other, but still maintain themselves on the oneness and can lead back again, each on its own path to the oneness. That is the secret sense, even of our own world of ignorance, which works from the inconscience, but with the underlying cosmicity of the overmind principle. But the individual being in such a creation does not possess this secret principle in knowledge, and does not base up in his action. An overmind being here would perceive this secret, but he might still work on his own lines of nature and law of action, swabhava, swadharma, according to the inspiration, the cosmic control or the inner governance of the spirit or the divine within him and leave the rest to their own line in the whole. An overmind creation of knowledge in ignorance might therefore be something separate from the surrounding world of ignorance and guarded from it by the luminous encircling and separating world of its own principle. The supramental Gnostic being, on the contrary, would not only found all his living on an intimate sense and effective realization of harmonic unity in his own inner and outer life or group life, but would create a harmonic unity also with the still surviving mental world, even if that world remained altogether a world of ignorance. But the Gnostic consciousness in him would perceive and bring out the evolving truth and principle of harmony hidden in the formations of the ignorance. It would be natural to his sense of integrality, and it would be within his power to link them in a true order with his own Gnostic principle and the evolved truth and harmony of his own greater life creation. That might be impossible without a considerable change in the life of the world, but such a change would be a natural consequence of the appearance of a new power in nature and its universal influence. In the emergence of the Gnostic being would be the hope of a more harmonious evolutionary order in terrestrial nature.
So these paragraphs are really so very powerful. I mean, this one again, each one of them. Sri Aurobindo over here is introducing actually the three major forces, we may say, of consciousness, of powers of consciousness, of the supramental working. And these are harmony, integrality, and unity. Now, these three, you may say, rest on each other. And it is exactly the coexistence of these that makes for the condition of a supramental manifestation. If these three did not coexist, even if there was one without the other, any one of these without the other or without the others, there would be some kind of limitation to the manifestation. Firstly, the idea of a harmony, as if points out, even opposites in a way are harmonious to a greater whole. They belong to complementary realities of that whole. As he says, for example, stillness and movement, eternity and time, these are two sides of the same greater whole. Now, in themselves, each form of consciousness experience seems to negate the other. And this is the reason why in the ignorance, which actually is a mental creation that prioritizes different ideas as independent realities, there is such a condition of war. War is the father of all things, as Heraclitus said. And it is good from that point of view, because otherwise we wouldn't be aspiring to that condition of harmony. See, but condition of harmony rests on integrality. This is the thing. All other kinds of harmony which are not integral are policed harmonies. They are compromises. They are not harmonies. So to arrive at true harmony, there has to be integrality. Condition of integrality is that each power within a harmonious whole recognizes the other powers as other formulations of itself. There is only one which is at work in everything. And therefore, each power, if it actually looks at something else, can discover its own being in it. That is the complex unity, which is integrality. But in itself, integrality, if it universalizes itself, if it recognizes itself in its fullness, sees that what is behind the power of its harmony is unity. So we see the hierarchy of these expressions. The outermost expression is harmony. The inner experience of that expression is integrality. and the innermost reality of these expressions and experiences is unity. These are the way in which supramental creation manifests in a world that seems even to be full of contradictions. Now, when supermind acts in its unveiled manner, this is what starts becoming the experience of the various different constituents of such a world. It would appear that those which are experiencing this tremendous infinite plurality, pluralism, of a world left to evolve by itself in independent forms, would start in its individual constituents to see itself in other things. That is because of the power of integrality that is opening up a new kind of experience. The more we experience that, the more we exercise that experience, the more our sense of integrality, harmony, integrality, and unity will grow. This is essentially what he's pointing out here. In the world as it is, this harmony is completely lacking. In its place, there is discord. If harmony is to emerge, then it may also emerge from the basis of the cosmic consciousness, that is the overmind. But there is a problem there, and that's the one that he brings up by saying, an overmind being here would perceive the secret, but he might still work on his own lines of nature and law and action, swabhava, swadharma, according to the inspiration, the dynamic control of the inner governance of the spirit of the divine within him, and leave the rest to their own line in the whole. An overmind creation of knowledge in the ignorance might therefore be something separate from the surrounding world of ignorance and guarded from it by the luminous encircling and separating wall of its own principle. In other words, it would be something that experiences its own unity with other things in itself, but not be able to communicate it to anything else. It would be a freak, an encircled, domain, fortress of unity in its own experience, but of division in its world experience, or in the world's experience of it. So instead of that, if the supermind starts acting, what will stand to the common experience of the earthly consciousness is individual constituents waking up to the intuition of their integrality, and that becoming the source of a greater harmony, a harmonious sort of manifestation. And here he brings up how even supramental and mental principles would enter into a harmony with one another, because after all, there is nothing here that is not a part of the supermind. Everything is given its reality by the supermind. And if that reality is recognized, it would have its own place and form what he calls the shining degrees of the ascent and allow various kinds of interchanges to take place, everything being known as various manifestations of the One. This also obviates the difficulty that one often comes across in structural descriptions of the cosmos. In other words, if we are to see things in some hierarchic fashion, even as matter, life, mind, supermind, etc., and make one greater than the other, there is always the difficulty of a domination of the higher, of the lower by the higher. That kind of domination belongs to mind. But in supermind, there is no such domination because everything is seen as part of itself. Everything is itself in a certain grade or degree, and hence there is unity, integrality, and harmony in all its expressions.
Why does it allow contradictions then? Because in the creation of the supermind, there should not be contradictions, right?
Contradictions, as he's saying, contradictions are two sides of the same coin. So long as we don't see that it's the same coin, they look like contradictions. But if we know it's the same coin, they're no longer contradictions. They are in relation to each other. They are mutually determining realities. In fact, in supermind, there must be contradictions, because if it is to express its own infinity, infinity implies the fact that whatever one can say its opposite. You know, so there is a coexistence of various different contradictions, but the higher or synthesizing, reality also is there. That's the thing about, you see, the contradiction is only a so-called contradiction. Dynamism and stillness, for example, are both faces of each other. When looked at from a higher point of view, that which is dynamic is also expressing the infinite as time, beginningless and endless. That which is static is also expressing the infinite as eternity, without beginning and without end. So you see, these so-called contradictions are partial experiences of something which is beyond them and form their unity. If we move from the viewpoint of integrality, then that which is dynamic will see that which is still is actually itself. You see, this is the whole idea of moving from one contradiction to another at a higher level. If we move to it at a higher level, you see that it is its own other form. And when one sees it,
Thank you.
ഫസ്റ്റ് റൗണ്ട് ഒന്നുമല്ല അത്. നല്ല രസമായിരിക്കും പോയി വാങ്ങാൻ. ചന്തം കണ്ട് മയങ്ങിയാണോ? ഞാന് നിങ്ങളെ കാട്ടിൽ മുമ്പേ അണിറ്റു. ഞാൻ ഫസ്റ്റ് മൂന്നിന് ഞാൻ അണിറ്റു അണിറ്റു. എനിക്ക് വന്നാൽ ചിലപ്പോ രണ്ടാക്കി മടക്കേണ്ടി വരും. അവനും രണ്ടും മൂന്നെണ്ണം കൊടുക്കണ്ടേ? അല്ലോ സാധനങ്ങളുണ്ട് അല്ലേ എന്റെ കയ്യില്, അതിൽ നോട്ട് ചെയ്തു. നിങ്ങൾ നായക്കളൊക്കെ ഒന്നും കുഴപ്പത്തില്ല. അതും നല്ല മനുഷ്യന്മാർ. അവിടെ തണുപ്പുള്ള ദിവസം നല്ല തണുപ്പും ഉഷ്ണമുള്ളപ്പോ നല്ല ഉഷ്ണം. സാറ്റർഡേ അവിടേക്ക് പോകണം. 23.
Yeah. എട്ടൊമ്പത് ആൾക്കാരുണ്ട്. അപ്പൊ ഒരാള് പോയി ചേർത്തറൊന്നുണ്ട്. മനസ്സിലായി.
ഗുരു
നമ്മളൊക്കെ നമ്മളെ ഗുരു തന്നെ അല്ലേ. ഗുരു വന്നാലേ കഷ്ടം അല്ലേ, അങ്ങനെയല്ലേ പറയാ. ഇന്റർനെറ്റ് നിങ്ങൾക്ക് ഇന്റർനെറ്റ് ഇഷ്ടമാണല്ലേ.